This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Draft Sickos, the show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed and YouTube channel, where we cover everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers. I am your host, Maxwell Baumbach, and today's co-host, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. My voice cracked because it's going to be a flu game for me, but the real star of the show, Stephen Gillespie, is here. Stephen, how have you been, man?
I'm doing well. Maxwell, thank you so much for sticking this episode out. I had a panic attack a la Rhea Ripley right before the show. And you're having your Becky Lynch strep throat going on right now, yep. But we're still out here to deliver a great, great podcast for the fans, man. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I took two naps today, which helped
a
lot.
There you go.
But yeah, this was an episode I wasn't going to miss for the world. We're so excited, like just as a crew to have you back in the mix. But also like just this episode topic was something I was really excited about. So, You were on leave. You had a lot going on with your work, obviously. Yep. The nature of your work kind of pulls you away for a couple months at a time. Now you're back. And I love getting to talk to you when you first come back because you've also been pulled away from the consensus. So when you come back in, you just sort of dive through a bunch of film. And there's been a lot that's changed between December and now. So we get a look at, you're kind of coming in and you're just looking at the film, the numbers, and sussing out like where you have these guys, and you're not dealing with like seeing a bunch of people on Twitter every day tell you this guy's got to be a first round pick. Like you're just looking at it so much more kind of objectively. And I'm really excited to talk through some of these recent risers with you. The first guy that we're going to start with is Jared McCain. Jared McCain at Duke finished the year 14.3 points per game, 5 boards, 1.9 assists, 1.1 steals, 46.2% from the field, 41.4% from three, just under 90% at the free throw line. Really exploded down the second half of the season. From January on, he averaged 15.6 a game on 46, 40, 88 splits. Really, really has exploded his stock, and I think just proved himself to clearly be the best guard in the Duke backcourt. When it comes to an NBA projection, at the very least, but even just in general, I think he was their best guard down the stretch. Where did you have Jared McCain before you left us in December? And where do you have him coming back now after digging into this film and seeing this explosion that took place down the stretch?
Well, yeah, Maxwell, before I even get into that, you touched on something, you know, being airdropped into the scouting process. And it's not that I was gone, you know, I mean, people who are watching live, thank you for everybody who's tuning in, by the way. I see the numbers popping up on like how many people are watching us right now. That's
big
pretty
proud.
So yeah. Thank you everybody for hanging out with us. The thing about being airdropped at this point in the season is, you know, leaving like late December, essentially January, right? Not only am I gone, but like I have no news, I have no TV, I have no anything, right? So it's just like I am cryogenically frozen and then brought back to life a la Austin Powers, right?
Yeah.
I take my 3.5 minute long pee and then I sit down in my office and then I watch film, you know, I say hi to my family, I love y'all, miss y'all. I got to get grinding again, right? I didn't just get back yesterday. I've been back for a little while, slowly just pecking away at my board. And it's just really cool to like have a perspective of like who I think is going to be where. I even did a time capsule piece on NoCeilingsNBA.com. I went back and looked at that. Some of that was really cool to see. Some of it's like, yeah, you know, it's a good thing that I get to come back and watch some film before I finish my board. But it's just cool to go back and see like who's where, especially for a player like how we're talking about here, Maxwell, with Jared McCain, because in December, I had him 49th on my board. And it felt like there was like a hodgepodge of freshmen around that time, Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember being around time.
Yeah.
There were so many freshmen that we were looking at, you know, Garway Duwall, Scotty Middleton, you know, a whole bunch of guys, you know, El Marco Jackson, that we were just waiting to pop off, you know. And it feels like every draft cycle we walk into this point of the season and there's somebody that was supposed to be this good that is, right? And then there's a whole bunch that aren't. So in December, I'm just kind of waiting to see who pops off. And then I come back and I see that Duke like stayed true to, you know, the recruitment process that they had with him. Flip was obviously still, you know, a high usage guy, you know, all throughout the process. But seeing McCain come back and just really leap into this part of the season, being such a remarkable shooter, a trusted play, like ancillary playmaker, didn't play his size, which is very important for his position and how he projects into the pros. It was just awesome, man. I love seeing that. I think that the shot is the NBA's skill right now. And we'll talk about this a little bit more, but this is a draft where you have to identify like a no kidding NBA skill set in a player. And that's what I think McCain does with his shooting. His build is interesting. He's very stocky and somewhat physical for a guy who's listed at 6'3". And Maxwell, you know how I feel about the 6'3".
Yep.
That's like the generic height for any college point guard. His performance against NC State was great. He quietly had a solid game, even though State kind of beat them up a little bit. I love his instincts on relocating on the perimeter. He does have low rim pressure numbers, Maxwell, and we've
talked
ad nauseum, even while I was here, about if you're going to be an outlier guard, you kind of have to do certain things well. You know, he had 87 free throws on the year, two dunks, a 23.0 free throw rate, which is decently low. It's indicated low on Bartorvik when you look at these things. I'm wondering, though, Maxwell, and maybe you can answer this question, how much was his role at Duke a necessity, right? Because they have so many guards, right? Like, Rhodes likes to get downhill. Proctor is like a rim pressure, like, table setter guy. You know, Flip likes to drive with the ball in his hands a little bit, too. He did show that he was capable of being a lead guard, so I don't know if, like, I mean, at the high school level, right? So I don't know how much of his projection that NBA teams are going to look at is like a decent bit of his high school film along with how he played at Duke. It's almost like the Kentucky guard bump that you kind of have to give some of these guys. I wonder if he's going to get that kind of level of benefit of the doubt.
It's funny. That's actually an exact question that I've had posed to me by front office people. Like, I think that's a real question, because on one hand you can you can look at the stat sheet and say like, hey, this guy has a really low assist rate. Like an 11 assist rate is something that you see among like big men now more commonly than among guards. But I think it's fair, like you said, to ask how much that is like role and necessity, because Proctor, Foster, and like Roach even, like they just don't, I mean, Foster has like some off ball equity, he can shoot, but like,
yeah,
Proctor needs the ball in his hands, even if he had a better shooting season. Roach needs the ball in his hands. He's not a real spot-up threat. We're like, McCain is going to be able to like legitimately space the floor from NBA. Like he's going to comfortably pull teams out from behind the 3-point line even. And ways that those guys won't. So it does make sense to, and just like they didn't have a lot of depth. So it's also like you need to play those other guards, and the best way to play them might be to play them with the ball in their hands. So I think that's a fair question. I do love that he rebounded above his weight. Like really great rebounder for a guard, and that matters a lot.
Gotta have that. Yeah.
It just feels like when you're a guard and you have an off game at the NBA level, like you need to have other stuff that you're doing. And even if it's just like grabbing one rebound that you shouldn't, like that goes a long way. I do think he's the guy that like ultimately can just get absolutely flamethrower hot. One thing that's like fairly encouraging to me, I know you mentioned like the rim pressure numbers. He was at least a good finisher when he was there. Like he is below the rim. Like he's not a guy who like registered. I don't know if he had like any dunks this season, but he does get up pretty well off one foot. Okay. He's a good pull-up shooter from long range, really good pull-up shooter in the mid range. Good from three off the catch, like can move into it. Great transition shooter. I like all the stuff with the shooting. I think the question really just turns to like how dynamic of a playmaker is he actually going to be? And I think that's going to be the biggest thing that I look into when I dig into the tape is more like just going through all of his pick and roll settings. Cause like, that's the stuff that's going to matter. Cause if he is just going to be like one of those scoring guards, like that's just not that interesting to me. Like if he's just a scoring guard who rebounds a little bit, like, because on one hand, like you could be CJ McCollum, like you could be Anfernee Simons, but if you're not that, like suddenly you're just not super interesting at all. So I think that would be my question for you is like, how much work have you been able to, cause like that for me is like the biggest thing that I'm gonna have to dive into. It's like, this is just ultimately a small guard with a super low assist rate. And like, I feel like I've never really been very impressed by like the handle. I feel like I haven't seen him make super advanced reads. I feel like part of the reason he does shoot in the mid range so much is he just doesn't have much of a counter bag at this point. So like, that's going to be the biggest thing I dive into. Where are you with that sort of element of his game, the playmaking and self-creation and table setting?
It's honestly just kind of weird for me, Maxwell, because when I watch, it's funny that I mentioned the Kentucky bump for McCain, because when I watch Duke now and when I watch Kentucky, it just feels like everything is stagnant. It's very isolation based, you know, like I would feel differently if I could evaluate McCain and like, you know, this is real low fruit for me to pick, but like a UConn setting where there's like consistent ball movement, things like that. You know what I mean? I just felt like in the film, there's not much opportunities for him to really do a whole heck of a lot of creation, you know? And that's why I keep coming back to like this role of necessity and going back and watching that high school film where he was able to do more off of the bounce. There's a lot of opportunities for teams to help off of other like off ball players on Duke. And I feel like that has to be kind of weighed into the calculation. And one thing that has been discussed about another player, and real quick, everybody who's not a No Ceilings Plus subscriber, you're going to want to subscribe, even if for a little bit, because here soon we're going to have our war room session where we talk about a certain point guard who I want y'all to go and look.
The 30 minute discussion over a very much non-lottery pick that was had.
Well, non-lottery pick as of right now, but I feel like there's a lot of discussions in this class getting a whole lot of, could he be the next, you know, Jalen Brunson type guard in this class? And I don't know if Jared McCain is more so like a Jalen Brunson as opposed to like, say, a Mark Sears, for example, but I just think that McCain at his absolute worst is going to be a reliable floor spacer. And I think that he's tougher than what we would consider him to be like an undersized guard would, he would be limited to, you know what I mean? And like, there's this like glass ceiling, Maxwell, you and I talk about this a lot, that these undersized guards really have to do a lot to break through. It doesn't matter how highly touted they are. It doesn't matter how well they see the floor. They have to be able to organize the offense at some degree. Now, you do have your outliers, like say a Seth Curry, who is not like the best organizer or anything like that. And ultimately, Maxwell, like that's where I kind of feel like there's a little bit of safety with the Jared McCain in like say a Seth Curry type role. But again, role and necessity. I feel like if he went to a team like a Houston Rockets where he wouldn't have to do a lot of on-ball stuff, we kind of already know what he brings to a team that has a lot of other players that deal with the rock a lot anyway. And he's not necessarily a traffic cone. I think he's like a really good one positional defender. I'll say really good. I think that he's a passable one position defender. And I think that helps him be able to see the floor too. I think, you know, it's just kind of like that low center of gravity, you know, very effective range, very cerebral player. And there's a lot, I think, to dive into as far as like his on-ball equity. And that's really what I think teams are going to want to look at in the scouting process before the draft.
For sure. So let's actually go to another guard that's in this sort of same height range, but I think I'm a lot more confident in at least finding a more simplified role. And that's Devin Carter at Providence, junior.
Absolutely.
Just a massive, massive explosion this year in terms of his production. 19.7 points per game, 8.7 rebounds per game. Those are like Pajemski rebounding numbers where it's like, wait a minute, you're not a power forward. Like, what are you doing? You're having all those rebounds. 1.8 steals per game, 3.6 assists to 2.7 turnovers. So like not the best in terms of playmaking, but the defense is outrageous. 1.8 steals per game, a block per game. Doing that in a high usage role is just bonkers. Like that is like
in a good conference.
Yeah. And like for a guard, like if you told me like, oh, like the Thompson twins did that in OTE, it's like, well, yeah, like they're just so much more athletic than everybody.
Yeah.
But for a guy like Devin Carter to do it just speaks on like the amount of like effort and second effort that he plays with to be able to continue to make plays defensively at that high of a clip. But we knew coming into the year, like Devin Carter is a solid playmaker. He is an above average rebounder for guard. I didn't think he was a great rebounder for guard, but I thought he was a good one. What I did not expect this year was a 3-point shooting. Coming to the year, Devin Carter, on like moderate volume, was a 28.8% 3-point shooter. This year, 37.7% from three, which doesn't sound like unbelievable, but he upped his volume to 6.8 attempts per game. Many of these were very deep threes, very high degree of difficulty threes. And a lot of these were pulling up too, 34% on pull-up threes and 40.2% off the catch. So just really, really impressive stuff from Devin Carter. This is a guy I'm like really excited about. I just think the hyper productivity is undeniable. I love the body with him. Like he's one of those guys that's listed at 195, but it's like a real 195. Like you see him against guys that like are listed at 195 and you're like, you're not 195. But Devin Carter, it's like, I bet he's at least that. Like I feel really confident in his strength. Scaling up to the NBA level, still with that extra bulk, he still moves pretty well on his feet. I think he might go higher than people think. And like, I know people in the top 20, I just think he's undeniable. And I think making that large of an improvement in a single offseason shows this kid's dead serious about putting the work in. And he has the propensity to improve. I love Devin Carter. Where are you at with him at this stage?
He just seems like the quintessential should have been drafted earlier than he did, and he hasn't even been drafted yet. And again, for the thing that's going to be dropping on No Ceilings Plus for our award room, brought him up a little bit higher than I think the consensus wanted to. And even right now, you know, I'll share my ranking, but even I feel like I need to move him higher. It just feels like there are certain rules that you kind of have to abide by in this year's draft class. But Devin, man, like I had him 80th on my board in December, and it's very much so like behind a bunch of these freshmen who kind of want to give a little bit more leniency to pop off. But I had a feeling that Carter was going to come up. Didn't anticipate him potentially being like in this maybe back half of the top 10 to like lotto range Maxwell. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that that's out of the question. I mean, you look at you know, he's got the NBA bloodline factor. Shout out another WWE reference because, you know, it's WrestleMania. There we go. But his offense, man, it's really rounded out into shape. We're going to talk about his defense ad nauseum, but we're talking about a guy who is in the 89th percentile on pick and rolls, Maxwell, 70th percentile on spot up, 79th in transition, 97th in cuts. Now, that was only like 3% of his possessions. He's got the build and he's got like the tenacity, the grit and the know-how to get to those spots, dude, that I feel like those cuts, they're only that few just because he kind of wanted to have like an extra thing to throw at defenses, I guess. I don't know, but
he's like a sneaky bouncy guy too. Like he's one of those guys that anytime you run like a query that involves dunks, Devin Carter comes up way more than you think. And I think because he's got that thicker build again, like people just don't expect him to get up how he does. Like the kid can jump. He can really jump.
Yeah. I mean, I even wrote in my notes that he kind of reminds me of Troy Polamalu, you know, with the hair, he runs like his hair is on fire. And he's very physical, man. Like, I feel like we keep touching on the physicality. But, you know, drew 140 fouls, 18 of which were and ones, and 26 dunks on the season, man. Like, that's just, that's remarkable. And you brought up the rebounding earlier. We often speak about how rebounding is an indicator of pro success. He had a 3.4 offensive rebounding rate and then a 23.7 defensive rebounding rate. That's ridiculous. And Maxwell, again, you and I talk about how rebounding numbers, even for guards, are very indicative to how successful players are going to be in the pros. We saw it last season with Pajimski. Pajimski's playing above, you know, a lot of where people had him. And we could be seeing the same thing again with Devin Carter. I think I'm going to ask you about this too, because I don't think that he's going to be like a lead ball handler and facilitator. But I think that he's better than what the consensus, like, I don't even really hear about playmaking necessarily being discussed with him. But if he's like even a slightly above average passer, for like this undersized off guard that he's projected to be, that's just even something else that makes him dangerous and sets him apart among here. And I mean, he's the son of Aaron Carter, so I mean, you get, the passing has to be, you know, or I'm sorry, Anthony Carter, not Aaron Carter. Best boy band, my bad.
But yeah, but Aaron Carter did beat Shaq, so for what that's worth, he could hoop.
Yeah, Aaron Carter could beat Shaq. There we go. Man, we're getting very nostalgic here.
Oh God, yeah.
But I think that his playmaking is a little bit unheralded compared to the rest of his game. And then just real quick, Maxwell, the defense. I mean, this is very pedestrian. Everyone's probably tired of hearing about it. 2.8 block percentage, 2.9 steal percentage, 89 stocks on the year to 63 fouls committed. That's insane. Looks to have a plus wingspan. I would really love to get his measurables any way that I could. And very smart hands. I would say probably 12th to 14th on my board right now. And I wouldn't hate it if an NBA team was like, what are we doing here? Like, this guy is like a 12-year pro easily.
Yep. Yeah. I think I had him 12 on my last board, if I'm not mistaken. He's really good. I think the playmaking is an interesting discussion to me. He's like, he feels very second side, which like, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Teams that need that with their jumbo creators that they have, you know what I mean?
For sure, yeah. And to me, like, the guys that I think of with him are like Javon Carter, De'Anthony Melton. Yeah, Dirty Dancer, though, Javon Carter. Like, those kind of guys. I think he might be a little...
Marcus Smart?
That's, like, the dream world scenario, is that he could be Marcus Smart. I think with Marcus, the difference is, like, he was so, so strong that, like, there'd be times, like, he'd be matched onto a five and, like, be all right. Like, I don't know that Devin Carter is that. I think that's the difference. I think with offense, I'm a little bit worried about the playmaking. I don't think it's bad. Like, I think there's times where he manipulates ball screens well. He'll keep his dribble alive against pressure. There's times where I like what he does is, like, a pocket passer. I think he sees the next pass well, which is probably, like, for his immediate translation, the most important thing is that, like, he's going to be able to come in and just skip it or shoot. I think my worry is that, like, I don't love his first step downhill. I don't think he's super, like, acrobatic at the rim if he has to, like, contort or meet, like, suddenly he meets a help defender at the rim. And then, like, sometimes he dribbles himself into bad spots and, like, doesn't throw the best passes. I think that's stuff that can come along because he can shoot. And I think, like, he's shown a proclivity to improve. I think he understands how defenses move because he knows how to move on defense. So I think that's stuff that can improve. Like, I don't think he's hopeless, but I don't see him ever being like the lead guard for an NBA team, even off like a second unit. Like, I don't see let's run the second unit through Devin Carter. Like, I think he's always going to be playing off of somebody else, but I think he's so good at basketball that it doesn't matter. I think he's just going to do so much as a floor spacer and defender that, like, you just live with that permanently.
And we always talk about, too, Maxwell, that the best role players in the NBA were the guys at their college. And, you know, we've seen Devin Carter now, like, run Providence. And that wasn't, like, a hands-down, like, foregone conclusion. Bryce Hopkins was supposed to be, like, a powerhouse on this team. And we just saw how they just gave the keys to Carter and just kind of let him run the show. And when he scales down his responsibilities on his team, and Maxwell, he's able to put all of his effort and intensity to shooting threes and playing, you know, nightmarish defense. I mean, teams are going to have a field day with him. He's definitely going to be the should have been higher on your draft boards, like redraft guy, like what we're seeing in the chat. I mean, D Stevens saying like I have him as seventh. Yeah. If Caruso Alonso had a baby, that might be crazy, but yeah, definitely appreciate the sentiment.
For sure. Yeah. Devin Carter is awesome. He's sick. I'm glad that you're also a fan. Makes you feel better about my eval there as well. Let's move on to Hunter Salas. This is an interesting one.
Like,
this is the guy that I feel like my feelings change about this guy a lot, but I think I like him ultimately. Like I just wrote a piece about him. So like, I clearly don't think he stinks. So Hunter Salas had two, like, I guess I'll say it. He had two back-to-back disappointing seasons at Gonzaga. Like, he had 2 years at Gonzaga where it's like, oh, wow, top 15 recruit, Hunter Salas. Oh, he, like, can't put the ball in the basket at all. And then, like, year two, it's like, all right, here comes the leap. And then, like, he's kind of the same guy again. This season, he transfers to Wake Forest, and man, can he play. 18 points per game, 48.7% from the field. So his most efficient season yet. But he's also 40.5% from three, and like similar to Devin Carter, he's just like suddenly a high volume tough shot maker after not being that at all previously. 4.1 rebounds per game, 2.5 assists to 1.9 turnovers, 1.1 steals, 0.6 blocks. Just one of those guys that like had a hot start, and I kind of doubted it because like Hunter Salas had just never been that dude before, and then he just stayed being that dude. I think what I liked about him was I also thought that he showed more as a creator for himself and others as the season went along. Like early in the year, it's like, okay, he's making shots, but like if a defender cuts him off, he can't do anything about it. There are no counters. He's not seeing the floor very well. It was just like, this guy's just scoring a lot of points, and when he cools off, it's not going to be anything special. He didn't cool off, and he got better at the stuff I wasn't happy with. What was it like kind of coming back into seeing that, like, the Hunter Salas hot start, like, just didn't end?
Yeah, so when I came back, Maxwell, you know, much like it is during the season, and, you know, we have our own individual processes when we pick, like, which players we want to prioritize when film burning, right? I had him 94th. On my board in December. So like I was tracking him potentially being a draftable guy, right? Like well within the realm of possibility. End of December is when we started hearing like, oh man, like did you see Hunter Salas in his last game? Like, oh my goodness. Like, yeah, okay, sure. It's December. We'll see what it looks like later. So when I popped on his film, dude, I was just like, this is the Hunter Salas that we were supposed to see at Gonzaga. You know what I mean? Maybe not at Gonzaga, because there's a certain way you kind of have to play there, right? Like Gonzaga is not a place where this Hunter Salas could exist, I don't believe, you know, because it's very, you know, got to play through the post. You got to kind of do a little bit of off the away action. You know, there's really no one on ball dominant player. Everybody has to be able to move with the ball, things like that. Transfers to Wake, and this dude is just reminding everybody of how good he was supposed to be. I mean, his minutes jumped from 16 minutes per game with the Zags last year to being the guy at Wake at playing 35 minutes a game. So, I mean, like almost the entire game, my boy's on the floor. I have him 21st on my board, Maxwell. And again, I keep referencing this war room thing. I brought him up for a certain team, and I was like fully expecting everyone to kind of be like, all right, Steven, like you're really showing that you haven't been here for a couple of months. Like really, Hunter Salas, like no one's talking about him at this range. Like, what are you doing? And I was actually surprised to see how many people were like, no, that actually kind of makes sense. I kind of dig that. Now, ultimately, we didn't draft him there and he went a little bit later on. But the fact that at like the early 20s, where I have him 21 on my board right now, I think it was like 21 to 23 that I brought him up. The fact that people were really considering him there, like, really kind of took me off guard because, again, Maxwell, it feels like there are certain rules that you kind of have to play by with this year's draft. It seems like because the top-end talent in this year's draft, Maxwell, is, like, no one's really blowing the doors off. Like, really, the top 10 to 12 prospects are all the same everywhere you look. They're just in different orders, right? Once you get past those guys, you kind of have to find an NBA skill. But you definitely can't find a a dude with juice, with zoom, with burst, with the dynamic ball in hand scoring playmaking ability. Just look for him in the second round, because in the first round, we need to find one specific skill set that this guy is good at. I'm trying to figure out, Maxwell, like, why, if I'm outside the lottery, why I don't consider drafting him, especially if I'm a team that has multiple picks and I do need like someone who can do stuff with the ball in their hands. Why am I not taking Hunter Salas? Like, this dude was supposed to be this good by all accounts when he came out. I mean, you went through the numbers, dude. He's shooting 49% from the floor, 41% from three, over 78% from the line. He's 6'5". He handles the ball well. He's got good body control. I love his D-cell game. Listen to these numbers, dude. 86th percentile in pick and roll, three-point shooter, 84th percentile in spot-ups, 83rd in catch and shoot, 84th when guarded, 67th when unguarded, 90th in dribble jumpers. Like, this dude can do a lot with the ball in his hand. Plus, I also, at his height and his athleticism, this is where I think you and I kind of differ a little bit. I like him to be kind of like a one or two position defender in the NBA. Again, I'm not talking like he's definitely not going to be a Devin Carter, or his draft stock would look way different. But I think that he's going to be like a passable defender. He does need to improve his strength. He is a pretty slim guy.
Yep.
I don't know how much I believe in the fact that he's been in college this long and hasn't really put up like a whole bunch of strength anyway, without any intel, obviously. It doesn't look like he's put on a whole lot of strength. I don't know how likely it is that he goes to the NBA, and he just does. I would automatically always kind of assume that guys will. But he mirrors his assignments well. I like that he does fight around screens. Like, he's competitive. You know, his instincts seem solid. There's a couple of plays that I remember looking at where he rotates off the ball to make the play. So it's like he's got some solid defensive instincts, and he's already like a dynamic, like, ball in hand scorer and can create for others as well. Like, why would I not want to take this guy in the first?
Yeah, I think it's plausible depending on the team. So, like, I have him, I don't have him the first, like, on my board, but when we did the mock, there was a couple picks where I was like, yeah, I'm fine with Hunter Salas here. And like, for sure, like, honestly, like, I know we're talking about like subscribing to No Ceilings Plus to hear the mock draft. Like, you should, like, getting the video and audio of the War Room is like worth the money if you're a sicko and like want to hear how we make our mocks. Back to Hunter Salas. Part of my concern with him is archetype, which I know sounds lazy, but I did a big column recently about like the value of positional size, and the not quite wing is like a dangerous bet. Like, the guy who's like not quite small forward size and not quite like a point guard ball skill wise hasn't been a great bet. I think what Salas has over your Keon Johnsons, your Jaden Springers, your Josh Christophers, your Blake Wesley's, your Wendell Moore's, your Johnny Davis's, and especially, unfortunately, especially in the case of Johnny Davis, is that he's so much better as a shooter than those guys. That, like, just being that good at playing spot up basketball is going to help him. Like, he can knock down threes, he can get straight to the rim, and like, he is a phenomenal mid-range shooter. Like, you mentioned those dribble jumper numbers, like 50.5% in the half court in the mid-range, like, just gets up so well in that shot. Like, a genuine three-level guy. I just don't, and like, this is a good question. Like, D. Steven asked, like, what's the difference between him and somebody like Austin Reeves? Like, to me, it was that Austin Reeves, like, was the lead guard for Oklahoma for 2 years before he came in. Like, Hunter Salas is not that as far as his creation for others at this point. Like, great at creating for himself, great at attacking off a spot up. Like, he's just not that kind of table setter at this point. I think I worry a lot more about the body than a lot of people do with him. Like, I just think it's going to be really easy to move him. Like you said, the fact that this isn't an 18-year-old that's skinny, but a guy who's been at high major programs for 3 years now and hasn't like put on the size. Maybe there's some injury stuff. Maybe there's, you never know. Like, I've talked to guys where it's just like, yeah, I've actually been injured every offseason. Like, you never know. And I don't know that that's the case with Hunter Salas. I'm just throwing
maybe
it out there.
No one's made him.
Sure. You know exactly. I
mean? Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a little bit more worried about, just because like the not quite wing can flop at times. But like, you look at just so many teams like Phoenix, like prior to the Royce O'Neal trade, was just so desperate for like any guy off the bench to get a hit shots. When I saw the Timberwolves up close, it's like, man, I would feel so much better about this team if they had like one more guy that they could bring in off the bench that hit shots. Like, Orlando needs guys that can hit threes. Like, so many of these teams, it's just like, if they had one guy that could come in and knock down some threes and like do some other stuff too, and is like up to the task athletically, like Hunter Salas checks those boxes. So I think for those reasons alone, he's a guy that might end up going higher. And I think he's going to be a great workout guy. Really, really intrigued to see where he ends up.
One thing that I want to bring up is, you know, I have, just like you, you know, there are a lot of people that I talk to in the draft community, whether it be scouts, you know, just fellow analysts, things like that, right? I think that we might get some of the, well, Alondis Williams put up numbers for Wake and look Jake at him. You know, Jake LaRavia, another guy too. I get it, but I just think that Hunter does his business a little bit different, where
his game is so different than those two.
Alondis was very much like a fire hydrant type player, right? Like barrel chested, kind of uses his physicality a little bit to leverage tough shots and things like that. You're not going to get a guy who can do the things with the ball in his hands that Hunter Salas can do, you know, typically like late in the draft anyway, right? And I just think because he doesn't really have, I think the 40% three-point shooting is real. You know what I mean? Like the shot's real. The difficulties were real. You don't have a lot of those types of guys in this draft. So why not try to get the guy? You know what I mean? Like that's ultimately where my philosophy is like, where's the other guy in this draft that can kind of do what he does in the back half of the first and second round? You know,
it's hard. Hard to find guys that put the ball in the bucket like that. We're going to take a quick break. On the other end, we're going to talk about some of the freshmen that really exploded down the stretch. Some really contentious names, some of the guys I'm really excited to pick your brain on. So stick with us. We will be right back.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about Keyshawn George from Miami. Really interesting player. Sort of had like some buzz because of like, there's some really interesting tools here. He's 6'8", has sort of a kind of a guard game. Didn't have the best counting number, 7.6 points, 3 rebounds, 2.2 assists, to 1.5 turnovers, 0.9 steals, 0.4 blocks, 42.6 from the field, but 40.8 from three and 77.8 from the line. One of those older freshmen, but a guy that like anytime you see a dude that's 6'8", that's got like that sort of a 3-point shot, whether it's pulling up, whether it's behind the NBA line, like this dude can just broke that ball. This guy is an unbelievable 3-point shooter, for the Miami Hurricanes this last year, one of their kind of lone bright spots. But yeah, really good 3-point shooters, especially in transition. Like made 44% of his transition threes, 35.3% on pull-ups. So there is some of that with like the playmaking that you can really sell yourself on. Maybe this like a second side guy. I really like him quite a bit. What are your thoughts on him? Like, what kind of player do you see him being? Because I think I think where I'm encouraged with him is I think there's actually a couple different avenues for him to having a nice NBA career. So where are you at with him?
So when I left, I think that Kaishan was one of these guys where it's like, are we sure he's not a guy? And I think it might have been Metcalf, if I'm not mistaken, because it's typically Metcalf, like one of the smart. We got a whole bunch of smart guys.
Yeah.
In the group, but like one of the smartest guys in the group. I think he put up like, why are we sure that Kaishan is not a guy? And he was 166 for me on my board at the time. And I've watched a couple of them. You know, give him. He's big. He's a freshman. He's got a stroke. Like that typically does well, you know, throughout the year, right? So kind of had a feeling that he was going to come on. The appeal with him is obviously the shot. I mean, he was 92nd percentile on the catch or shoot looks, 97th when left wide open, right? Yeah. Like that's as a freshman. Yeah. Like that's you're getting drafted. The question is when, right? 77th when guarded, 59th on dribble jumpers, right? The shot is beautiful. And everything that you're saying, Maxwell, I agree with. But one thing that we started this season talking about is where I want to kind of kick it back to you. And it's often one of the most overlooked things that we talk about with translating up into the pros is strength.
Yep.
With a player. And I genuinely worry about that, Kaishan, right?
Sure.
Like, we've seen it with guys like a Jet Howard. You know, this year for the Orlando Magic, right? Just because you can get on the floor and you can shoot, that's like you can't be Jason Capono anymore. You know what I mean? Like we talk about this all the time too. Like you can't just come in and stand in the corner and shoot. You have to be able to do other things, right? Like I worry about Kaishan's ability just to see the floor. Now, if you're telling me that there's a playoff team that you know, a couple of years, you're kind of worried about, you know, roster and things like that. You just want to kind of secure a guy that, you know, has a skill. I totally understand that. Right. I mean, and look at these physicality numbers, right? Like free throw rate of 14.2. That's like anemic.
Yeah. Know,
from being able to get like, to be able to get easy points by going to the free throw line. This dude does not like contact, you know? So that's ultimately where I am with him. And it's kind of funny. We talked about, you know, Brandon Miller last year. A lot of people did anyway, saying like the physicality and things like that. It's with Kaishan, it's kind of like you kind of see where strength is important for certain players compared to
it's
like
so important for Brandon Miller. Like Brandon Miller has been awesome this year. Like he's still not great at the rim. Like that is still a flaw in Brandon Miller's game.
Yes. And but Brandon has like when he has the audacity to try, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and he does like, he can actually get off one foot. Like when he's got like a runway, like he can do it. Like Keyshawn's not that athlete. Like he's just not.
No, he's really not, man. I mean, the rebounding numbers, again, we talk all the time about how indicative that is of pro success. I don't really love the decision-making, like the processing to move the ball around or anything like that. He's pretty good at like the stuff with the, like he's good with the ball in his hand for like himself, but he's got to grow in so many areas. I don't know how much I trust his handle, like translating up.
Yeah.
I just think with his age, his size, the shooting profile that he has, I have him in my late first round. It's not like I'm saying like, don't draft this guy. I have him 28. There are a lot of places where I have seen him like significantly higher up. And
yeah,
I just, if I'm a team and I'm drafting high, why am I drafting a player that I'm worried about being able to see the floor immediately? You know what I mean? Like that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. I actually like him quite a bit. So I've got him around like 20 ish. My thing with him is I think there's just like a lot of avenues that this game can work. I agree with the flaws like completely. Like he can play really weak with the ball at times. I do think like he actually has some like decent strength like through his legs and stuff. Like I think he can get better in that respect. But he doesn't play through contact very well. My concern with him is also like I made this meme on Twitter like years ago, where it's like the Winnie the Pooh meme, where it's like it's like the Winnie the Pooh like looking normal, and it's like this player is slow as shit, and then it's like Winnie the Pooh in a tux, and it's like he plays with pace, and it's like
yes,
like I think Kaishan like might seem to be a guy who like plays with pace because like he can't go any faster than he goes. Like I worry that there just might not be like any second gear, that it's just first gear. Like we're not even talking third gear. We're talking like it's just first gear. Like he is one of those guys who never got to the rim on spot up attempts. And we're going to talk about another one of those guys later. Like he on like 80-90 spot up possessions took 8 twos. Just because like there is no like, oh, you flew by me and now I'm getting to the rack. Like he doesn't have that. And, like the times he did get to the rim was more off pick and roll. And like even then, like very more like pace and like I've got you on my hip and I'm just gonna sort of slowly get to the basket now. A pretty poor like rim pressure and finishing rates for a guy his size. I think he lacks an in-between game both as like a passer and as a scorer. Like there's nothing to him in the mid-range at this point. I just buy the shot and the size and the feel so much, and I think that there's enough to the handle that if you can make some athletic improvements, like you're really in business. I think there are like Cam Johnson avenues. I think there are like Joe Ingles avenues. I think there's like Kyle Anderson with a bit of a jump shot avenues. Like I think there's ways for him to make this work. Like I think even with the flaws that are here, he still has enough like feel and juice.
Mm-hmm.
And defensively, like I actually think he uses his length pretty well. Like he's pretty imposing.
Yeah.
You can kind of play him at like the two, because he does slide his feet okay. Like he'll get around ball screens, uses his hands. Like his feet aren't the best, but again, like the length just goes a long way to compensate for it. If he does get better as a rebounder, there's some like grab and go stuff. He's a really good transition player. I think that there's like blends of those kind of three guys that I mentioned that like, I don't know, like none of those are a one-to-one fit. Like he's not Cam Johnson, he's not Kyle Anderson, he's not Joe Ingles, but like I think there's elements of all of them that are a little bit present here that like he could make work. I just think that like there's the tools and the size are too much for me to pass up when he knows how to play basketball and shoots 40% from three and he's 6'8". Like I agree. I think there's like worlds where like he might just get eaten alive on an NBA A1, but like that's a guy I'm cool being patient with.
Yeah. And I like the Cam Johnson comparison more so than I see like the Joe Ingles, because I've spoke about Brandon Miller's audacity. You talk about like a player with audacity. That's Joe Ingles. Like
And he's like thick, like throwing his body on people to get like positioning on the elbow and stuff. And
yeah. And people call him a janitor and stuff like that. And he jokes about it himself, but I mean, like, that dude is not afraid of anything. You know, he doesn't play scared. And the thing with George is like, once he gets chased off of his spots in the NBA, like what is he going to do? And I think like that's where have like all these different avenues that you kind of have yourself going down. Like for me, you know, other wings that I have ranked ahead of him, I like Neat Clifford, because I think that he plays a little bit less timid. Jalen Tyson, a guy who, you know, I liked before I left, you know, I would take Tyson over him. So it's, but again, first round talent, easily first round talent, you know, the size, the stroke, hit the fact that you do project him getting stronger, like that shores up a lot of the weaknesses that he has. But still a little bit worried when it comes to like, if I'm drafting a player and I'm excited about a freshman coming rookie coming in, do I need him to see the floor, you know, and that kind of impacts where I take him a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's completely reasonable. So the next guy is actually somebody that I'm like a little more like, let's pause a little bit here.
Yeah.
Are you too?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. I feel like this is like one of those guys that like I voice this to people and like, I get a lot of pushback. Johnny Furphy.
Shut up, Maxwell. Yeah.
Johnny Furphy from Kansas. Great second half of the season, like nothing away from him. Like I think this is a guy that's like going to be around for a while. I just don't like, yeah, we'll get to it. 9.5 rebounds per game, 1 assist, to a little under 1 turnover. So positive turnover ratio at 6'9", 0.9 steals, 0.3 blocks, 46.6, 35.2, 76.5 shooting splits. with Furphy, like, I totally get the idea. Like, this is a guy who's 6 foot nine and, like, had a stretch where he was, like, 40% from deep. Like, if you buy that there's, like, a 6 foot nine knockdown guy, like, yeah, that guy's going to, like, at least keep a foot in the door. Like, he's, you know, that could be, like, a, you know, Jake Layman type. You know what I mean? At worst. But he's also a really good mover. He's constantly doing stuff off the ball. Like, sneaky competitive on the glass. Like, one of those guys who just gets a couple, like, real nice offensive rebounds every game. I think the decision-making is actually, like, decent. Like, I think he's solid with knowing what to do with the ball. I think the problems are that if the shot is not real or if he's just an okay shooter, I don't know that he provides you value if you are the team drafting him. I like him much more as, like, a longer-term proposition. And he wouldn't be somebody, like, I'd be tripping over myself to get this year, especially if I was a more competitive team or, like, a team that just doesn't have, like, enough roster spots for more developmental projects on it. Defensively, like, I think he's a turnstile right now. Like, I don't like the defense at all. Like, this guy's just constantly getting beat. And I think most concerningly is, like, again, kind of like with George, he's one of those guys, like, you chase him off the line and he's got nothing. Like, he never gets to the rim unassisted. With George, I mentioned that he had like 90 spot up possessions and took 8 twos. For Furphy, that was 94 possessions and then 5 twos off of those. Like, if it's not transition, like, he's just not getting to the rim himself. Like, he's, so if the shot isn't there, if he's like a 33% 3-point shooter in the NBA, which wouldn't be unrealistic when we're looking at like 37 in college, I just don't know what he's doing for you. I think there's worse guys. Like, and I think he does, like, know how to play to an extent. Like I mentioned, like, I actually kind of buy the passing a little bit. D mentions the relocation. I think that's something that he does really well. Like, when the ball would go into Dickinson in the post, or if somebody, like, generated penetration, he knows where to position himself on the perimeter. I don't think he's scared of physicality at all. Like, I think he's a little weak right now, but I just think that's, like, he was a late Grossberg guy, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, he's just one of those guys that's going to fill out a little bit later. But I just don't love the offensive skill level, and I'm very concerned about the defense. So I think if the shot isn't there out of the gate, like, suddenly it's really dicey for him. I don't hate Johnny Furphy. Like, I, like, at a certain point, he's going to get drafted, especially by a team with multiple picks. I'm just not, like, I want him in the lottery. Like, for a while, there was, like, a time where, like, we were hearing from people that, like, yeah, he's going to be a top 20, top 15 pick. And I'm not that excited about him. What are your thoughts on Furphy?
Yeah. Looking at my notes and kind of like doing the breakdown with George, I think obviously, like, we're all still tinkering with our boards, but, like, me in particular, I have him 33 and I have
that's around Ryan,
George 28. Right. So the concerns that I have are both similar, but like you're saying, I do like the mentality a little bit more with Furphy than I do like a George, but he is a little bit smaller, right? I think that George is actually a little bit more toolsy defensively and, like, showed that throughout the year where Furphy didn't. But you look at, like, the movement shooter within an offense that, you know, kind of had, like, a lot of moving parts at once. You know, there was several times where, you know, Kansas would have a ball handler, they'd run a pick and roll, and as they're running and you have both the ball handler and, you know, Hunter Dickinson attacking the basket, you kind of have Furphy kind of like foosball player-esque. You know, you got two guys on the beam, and, like, as you're sliding that beam, they both keep their separation, like, the same distance, like, as the play's continuing, right? Furphy's relocation while other people are moving is just phenomenal, like, especially, like, on off-ball screens. I really like that. But again, looking at the mentality, he's less efficient than George was, but he did attack the glass more. He also registered fewer assists. So, like, there's, like, this give and take between these two players that just, like, makes it really weird for me. I do also like how he sees the floor. He just has a harder time getting the ball to where he wants it to go. Like, you can see the decision-making process isn't, like, necessarily broken. I just don't know if it, like, needs to be honed a little bit more. He is a bad defender now. It's going to be tough for me to imagine him seeing the floor due to that. He's not really good at navigating screens at all. Gets blown by a ton and not versatile enough to where, like, I can't imagine him guarding bigger players or faster players. So, like, really that makes him, like, a who's like the least impactful wing that the other team has. Like, that's who he's going to guard. And I don't know what other ancillary skills you can squint at and see him utilize to kind of supplement his like really good shooting. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I'm at with Furphy. That being said, man, like, I would still, I could understand like in this draft, if someone wanted to take him like in like that 23, 25 to 35 range. Like,
sure. Yeah.
If you took him like 20, 23 and on, like, I'm with you. I could see it. I wouldn't do it, but I could at least understand like the argument to do so.
Yeah. And I think depending on like how pre-draft goes too, like so many of these like younger guys, and they can really move the needle for themselves during pre-draft. I also think for like a team with multiple picks, like if you're just really buying it, like, I don't think it's indefensible or crazy. Just personally, a guy I'm a little bit lower on. The next guy, I'm like super curious for your thoughts. I've talked about this guy ad nauseum, so I'm like honestly sick of talking about this guy, and I'm sure people are sick of hearing me talk about him. So, yeah, exactly. So I'm excited to hear you talk about him. So Colibri Boyles from South Carolina, bizarre player.
Yes,
10.4 points per game, 5.7 rebounds per game, 1.8 assists, 1.2 turnovers, which is a great number for a 6'8 guy. A block and a steal per game, like excellent steal and block rates. About 60% from the field and 67% from the free throw line. Really interesting Swiss Army knife. Does not shoot at all. 0% from three on the year at 6'8 is an undersized big. What do you make of this guy? Because he's confusing.
Yeah. Another player that I didn't have ranked in December, but I did have him on my watch list. You know, another freshman, decent frame, guy who was trying to like make a name for himself, like went to South Carolina, even like decent opportunity for him to be an impactful player, but really wasn't doing much until like February, right? And even now there are like murmurings that he's likely to return to school, but things change like pretty easily. Like, all it takes is for him to go to these workouts, Maxwell, and you know this, like go to these workouts, like do really good, and teams like, hey man, like you should really stay, like can't tell you that we're going to take you, but like we really like you a lot. You should stay. I have him, and I know that this is like contrary to popular belief. I'm not expecting to get a like attaboy, Steven, like we're with you in the chat, right? I have him 37th on my board. And again, okay, like could see him anywhere, like for me, if I'm picking like from that 23 on range, right? He is a really tricky evaluation, right? Still have a long way to go in my film dive with everybody, right? But his finishing numbers are pretty good, right? But there were several times where I watched him on film and I'm like, is he going to get the same look in the NBA? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and there were times where he went up against like really big guys, like similar to what he's going to be facing in the NBA. And I was just like, man, they're really giving him some tough looks, but he can still kind of convert. So it's like, what do you do with those, right? And that's beyond like the whole like, it will, when he faces Embiid or Jokic, like he's gonna have prompt, like, well, no kidding, right? Like everyone does. But he's good at playing physical, dude. He's 23 dunks on the year, 12 and ones, grades up on both sides of the rebounding numbers as well. I do think that he needs to get stronger again. Like, he struggled to do both carve out space and convert. Like, I felt like he did one or the other several times throughout the year, but like piecing both of those things together were more difficult for him. I think he's a fine athlete, but if you're going to draft a guy who's like an undersized big like him, I would like to see a little bit more lift in a guy like JT Toppin, for example. Like,
sure, sure.
Yeah, he's very springy. He's got helium legs, right? And the other thing is like, he doesn't space the floor at all. You know, he is a 68% free throw shooter, so I could kind of maybe convince myself that he's going to eventually get a shot, but he didn't attempt, but what, like three-pointers all year long, dude? I don't think that he's going to be a four in the NBA without a shot, which kind of does limit him to being a five. And if I'm drafting this dude as a five, like, am I going to run offense through him? Like, do I like him as like a elbow extended playmaker / rim runner, screen setter? He looks like he can be effective in handoff scenarios. I would like to see him be into more of a facilitating role, kind of like a KJ Adams Jr., what we see out of Kansas, like a very good elbow passer. If you can believe that he can do these things, like I could understand wanting to spend capital on him. And he probably believes in his ability to do things, these things too, right? But if you think that he can do all these things, he's got to be like way high on your board. Like if you think that he's going to be like these undersized big man who can do all these things, like break that glass ceiling, I feel like you either are all in on him or you're kind of like how it sounds like I am, is like back half of the first round, like maybe priority second round pick. Like, I don't think that you can have this dude like middle of the first round and with like his style of play, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's tricky because on one hand, he is like ridiculously productive defensively. I think I'm much higher on him as like a mover and an athlete than you are. Like, I like how he gets up. I love how he moves his feet. Yeah, near 5 block rate, 2.8 steal percentage. Really good on the offensive glass. I love how he passes. Like, I just think there is a lot of like valuable like skill, size, power, feel, which is like a combination I love in a 6'8".
Yeah.
Like I really like that. My thing with Colin Murray Boyles is this. I'm sorry, I'm stealing this from the chat. Ranked Scrimmage mentioned that we should find out a way to display a name when we're talking about a player. So I'm just going to type the guy's name in and put it up. So now you guys will know who we're talking about. So Colin Murray Boyles, I just don't know. Like, there's so many guys in this mold this year where it's like the undersized from a height perspective, like not a center height wise. But like not shooty enough to be a four in today's era, but also can pass and like defend a couple positions and provide secondary rim protection. Like, there's a lot of those bigs in this class, and I have no idea what to do with them. Like Mogbo, Oso, CMB. Like, there's a lot of these dudes, and like, it's just not a player type you see much in the NBA, like outside of Golden State. And like, I feel like a lot of times you're like, oh yeah, I could be like Kevon Looney or he could be like Draymond or whatever. It's like, those guys are on the same team. Like, there's one team these guys play for. And that's where I get a little bit scared, to be quite frank, about projecting this type of player. What we hear about the shot in pre-draft is like ultimately going to kind of affect where I put him, to be completely honest, because I've heard from people that he can shoot, but I heard that Santa Claus brought my daughter gifts for Christmas. You know, I'd feel a lot more confident that being the case if I actually saw it with my own eyes. So that's kind of where I'm at with Murray Boyles. It's just like, I think you're really interesting. I, again, like, he to me, and like similar to Furphy, is like one of those guys where if I'm like a team that's super rebuilding or a team that has like, we just don't have any real projects on our roster and we can afford to take one on, maybe I swing at this guy because it's such a unique skill set. Or if I'm a team with multiple picks, like if I'm, you know, Utah, but why not? Like, let's get funky with it. My concern though is like, if you're going to, I don't think he can anchor a defense at his like current size. Like, I think you would need a lot of other good defenders on the floor. Like, I just don't think he's that with where the league is headed currently. And if he's not that, he probably needs to shoot it a little bit. And I think I've seen way too many people pick, oh yeah, he could be like a 33% 3-point shooter. And like, I'm not sure that he
can. Zero.
Like, that's the thing, is like, it'd be one thing if he was at like 29 and you're like, yeah, you can get to 34. Like, I personally believe like Kwame Evans is a guy I've had in my top 20, like all year. Because I believe Kwame Evans can be a decent three-point shooter, and when he does, he provides fantastic value. With Colin Murray Boyles, we're not talking about going from 29 to 34 or 36. We're talking about going from zero to, like, I guess, hopefully 31. Like, it's just a lot. He did have mono at the beginning of the year, which is part of the slow start. There was some talk that he can shoot. I don't know. It's hard for me to buy in completely without seeing the shot with my own eyes. Dirty Dancer in the chat makes like, I don't think he's much more than PJ Washington kind of comp. Like, I think that's a reasonable outcome. I think people get like, yeah, like that's a good player. Like, that's a good player. Yeah. I think people are getting a little too starry eyed with him in some senses, just because this is such a boring draft. Such a like not super top heavy draft that people are getting a little bit carried away with what someone can turn into. I think he's good. I think he's intriguing. I'm just not like, he's not like my favorite upside swing, I guess I would say, in this class.
we're going to do one more break. And after we do, we're going to do some sit-go session, just talk through a couple guys that we really like that are going to be going back to school. So stick with us, and we're going to do that on the other side. All right. So let's do some sit-go session. Steven, who is the guy that you wanted to talk about for this set?
Yeah. So as I type some things in real quick, Bryce Williams, man, out of Nebraska, a player that I go back and I watch. I'm like, if he didn't already say, like, I'm kind of already thinking about going back, I think he actually just recently did announce that he's going to go back to school and specifically like stay in Nebraska,
which I love, by the way. I think a lot of guys are like burning themselves by chasing bags, and like, I get it. Like, I get it financially. Like, I would probably be in a position where I would have to do that. But I think from like a long view perspective, sometimes there's value to like being the man. And if you're in a situation where like you have your coaching staff's trust, I think there's value in that.
I also would love to see him just go and get feedback, though. And I'm not saying that he has, like, he won't or anything like that. I'm not, like, I haven't checked the early entrant tracker in the last 15 minutes, which means that there's probably, like, 30 people who have either declared and maintained college eligibility or transferred by now. But, dude, Bryce Williams has like, the skeleton of being, like, a very good player in next year's draft, which is kind of like the point of the sicko session, is like, guys, we're just kind of long-term projecting these guys down the line for next year. I think that he has the tools to like really pop out, and I hope he does test the waters, because I mean, we're talking about a guy now, he's an upperclassman. So, you know, people might want to, you know, turn the channel or turn the volume down a little bit, because we're talking about a grandpa. But, I mean, he's 6'7", fairly athletic, upperclassman with a well-rounded game. And his three-point shot has taken a dip over a couple of seasons, Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2 years ago, he was a 43% three-point shooter. That dipped all the way down to 40%. This year, he was only at 39%. Yeah. Right? So, I mean, it's like a downward trend. I mean, the shot is a little bit of a mess. Obviously, tongue-in-cheek, but
yeah,
he's proven to be a reliable three-point shooter. For a long time at 6'7", 84th percentile in catch and shoot opportunities. Maxwell, 93rd percent when guarded on some very tough looks for a Nebraska team that did make the tournament. And even when they did make the tournament, they lost. He still looked good. 71st percentile in the pick and roll, 76th percentile in handoffs, 93rd percentile on cuts. His shooting is going to be the sell. But I do like his ability to get downhill. Like, he can kind of finish with either hand, shows good pace and cadence with the ball. Not to say he's slow at all,
yep,
but he knows how to mix up, like, the change of pace really well. He's not super preferential to attacking the one side over the other. 56% of his drives were to the left, 39% were to the right, 4% were straight on. He did score 24% on 47% shooting, 4 assists, 4 boards, and 1 turnover against Texas A&M in the first round of the tournament. Maxwell, I don't know why he couldn't be your Neat Clifford / Jalen Tyson in next year's draft, dude. I don't know why he couldn't be.
Yeah, I feel like all the, like, everything about Nebraska like flew under the radar. Like, they were just such an exciting team to watch this year between like Tominaga, Bryce, Rank Mass, like, there's Jawan Gary is like my favorite, like, yep, guy energy, like, yep, dog in the country, like, he rocks. Yeah, the Bryce Williams thing is kind of weird, just because like he did a lot of stuff that teams look for in a modern wing, and like nobody ever talked about him. He scaled up wonderfully, transferring up from Conference USA, and like a little less efficient, a little less good on twos, but like rebounded better. Better assist to turnover ratio, better defensive numbers, like, really nice. Anytime a guy is like an older prospect, something I look for is like, are they still getting better? Like, cause I don't care about age. Age matters significantly when projecting guys to the NBA. But when there's a guy who's a senior and it's like, he averaged like 12 points and 6 boards for like all 4 of his college seasons, it's like, I don't want that guy. Like, I don't want the guy who's like the same guy he was 4 years ago. Like, what am I hoping he's going to turn into? Or with Bryce, like, he got better while playing better teams this last year. So I like him quite a bit. To your point, just total Swiss Army knife. Like, whatever you want offensively, he's going to do it. There's some feel. There's some shooting. Just real jack of all trades. I love the shot, and I love like the diversity of the shots that he's able to hit, like a pull-up guy, a movement guy. Really good decision maker. Like I wish he offered a little bit more inside. I wish he was a little bit quicker. I wish he was a little bit more vertical, both on defense and on defense as well. Like not the fastest reaction time, but he's 6'7". Like to me, this is a guy that like I look at the Portsmouth mock that the rookie scale guys put out, and like I just don't see a world where Bryce Williams is not at Portsmouth next year at worst. And like if he makes more improvements, like I don't know. Like this is just a type of player that every team needs. It's like a 6'7" guy that can like make decisions and hit shots and do a little bit of everything. So I'm
2.5 assists too. Like, I mean, that's not setting the world on fire, but
no,
for a shooter slash, you know, kind of scorer guy to do that and be plus in the decision-making, you know, profile, like that's, I don't know. It's just interesting, man. I kind of, there's a couple of guys that I think fell through the cracks this year. I think that he's one. Really like Joel Soriano too. I think that I could have easily went with him for this exercise as well. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. I'm big Bryce guy.
Yeah. So Soriano, I'm assuming is going to be in Portsmouth. And like when I write that column, like he's going to be one of the guys that I predict to be a standout because like there's just no way Joel Soriano is not going to have like 18 and 12 in every Portsmouth game. Just because like that's what Joel Soriano does. Like that's a guy that I think is just going to be really solid. So I think the other thing that's like kind of nice about Bryce too is that the Nebraska system I think has real value to it, and that like they kind of they don't play like an NBA team, but the fact that they don't have like a point guard that operates everything I think has some value. Like the fact that he played off of Mast I think is like if you're a team that has a playmaking center, you can talk yourself into like, oh yeah, like he knows how to play off that guy immediately.
Yep. Yeah, makes cuts, runs handoffs. Yeah, like relocates, all of that.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit. My guy was Brooks Barnheiser at Northwestern.
Yeah, let's go.
So I don't know, like, and this is going to be an internal discussion that we have at some point. Like, I don't know what no-son intern is going to be this year because now everyone just transfers. So it's like,
of course.
I can't do all mid-major guys this year. Like, I can't even, like, I don't know that I'm going to be able to even, like, make it mid-major majority this year. Because, like, I'm going to try. To me, it's, I don't know, but if I do it, Brooks Barnheiser is going to be a guy that I talk about if I decide to go the less mid-majory direction, because holy cow, is this guy good. He is, the immediate sales pitch that I'll give is if you squint, it looks a little bit like Jaime Jaquez, and a lot of people say that about a lot of guys, and I don't think it's true. With Brooks, like, I do genuinely think there is some Jaime Jaquez. He's not the athlete that Jaime Jaquez is. Like, period, point blank. Not the athlete Jaime Jaquez is. Jaime Jaquez is, like, legitimately a really good athlete. Barnheiser, though, has that similar, like, herky-jerky handle, in-and-out, tricky, like, just attacking game that Jaquez has. And he's also built like a tank. Like, Barnheiser was next to Alex Caravan, and, like, Alex Caravan, if you didn't know any better, you'd be like, that guy looks a little slim. And like Caravan's not slim. Like he looked like it next to Barnheiser. He's got enormous calves. Wish I had those calf genetics, but I don't. That's life. Can't be perfect. Really like
him. Humble.
Yeah. Defensively, like I wish he was a little bit quicker. But he still put up awesome stock rates, like 3 steal percentage, 2.5 block rate, really strong through his chest, can really kind of keep guys at bay, and it's tough to get anywhere against him. Offensively, like I mentioned the herky-jerky stuff. He's got this awesome pull-up game. But he shot really well down the stretch this year. Like, he's one of those guys who's 35% from three. But I want to say, I'm going to pull up those numbers now. I think during conference play, those numbers were better. Let's see. Yeah, 41.8% during conference play. So, like, if he just has a year, or is it, like, 38, 39, there's going to be a lot to love with this guy. Clever passer, uses some smart delivery angles, positions himself while coming off the screens to get himself clean looks. Powerful guy, ready for the physicality of the NBA. Got some creativity to him. I'm not sure if he's like quite quick enough. He's like kind of one of those 3-4 tweeners where like he's going to struggle with the speed of some threes. He's going to be a little short against some of the fours. Probably needs to measure well to get like drafted super high, but just knows how to play. Tough. I like him.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I mean, you're talking about a guy who spent 3 years at Northwestern, has grown in his role while improving his efficiency each of those years, with the exception of, I think, his free throw percentage took a little bit of a dip this year, but it's still like in the upper 70s. So, I mean, nothing to scoff at. 6'6" is what he's listed at, and he plays bigger, like how you mentioned, Maxwell, in like the best way possible, right? Like, he's not like slow, so you kind of have to play him in your front court. Like, he moves well, and he's very strong, and that allows him to be a little bit more versatile defensively. I think Northwestern had him spend a good amount of time at the four this year as well, which is like you love to see that type of stuff from a potential like NBA like kind of wing forward type guy, right? You touched on the playmaking, man, like very smart, connective passer. Not a guy that you're gonna like look at to be a hub, but definitely moves the ball along well, like sees the next pass type thing. Has improved defensively each year too, right? So if you're looking for like these sleeper guys who you think look to take the next step next year, you want to see these guys that have like that sustained improvement as the years go on, right? In their tournament game, I don't know how many people knew they played in the tournament this year, but they did. Look good against FAU. 18 points against UConn, despite not being very efficient from deep. He was 1 of 5. And that's really like the big thing for him, man, is like the shot looks a little bit hitchy with the support arm, kind of rotates the ball across the body. I think that if he can improve like the timing of the shot, he'll have an opportunity to burst on the scene a little bit more. But he was 69th percentile nice in spot ups, and he was in the 83rd percentile arm pick and roll looks. Kind of like how I was talking with Bryce, how he's a little bit more split with how he attacks the basket. Brooks, not so much. He was about 60% of his drives were all to the left, 30 to the right, and 10 down the middle. Again, not uber athletic, but plays strong defense. I think that he could kind of be in like that Pell Larson, Blake Henson, like St. Thomas range on my board at the start of next year, kind of like that second round to priority undrafted free agent, but maybe even a little bit higher. I want to go back, and obviously you're going to have to rewatch a lot of film once everyone declares and everything like that, but real shot at making an NBA team next year, man. And like big, big Brooks guy moving forward.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. He's super, super exciting. Really intrigued to see where he ends up in terms of just like draft stock after another year at Northwestern. Going to be an interesting situation there too. Like Boo Booey is gone, which is crazy. Like feels like he was there for the last 35 years. So going to be interesting. But yeah, that does it for our list. What if you got anything coming down the pipe? Or, I mean, you're just kind of getting settled back in right now. So how's everything going for you on the content front? Do you got anything in the works?
Yeah. I'm going to be doing a Peyton Sanford piece in the coming days. I think I'm also going to kind of play off the being cryogenically unfrozen and do like a touchback on my looks and locks from my last piece that I did, and kind of maybe use that as like a plus column. I think that'd be cool just to give fans like a perspective of what it's like to just be like grafted into the draft community at this point into the season. So working on those things a little bit. And yeah, man, I'm excited just to be back on the pod. I'm excited to interact with everybody, to be a part of the mocks, to be a part of like the draft guide, you know, that everybody loves seeing whenever that drops. I'm excited to be back in time for that, and you know, continuing to lean on making connections and just growing with the community as it grows, man. I'm just happy to be back.
For sure. Yeah. We're so excited to have you back. I got some big things on the pipe this week. We've got, my Enfali Dante article coming out tomorrow. I've like kind of fell in love with Enfali Dante writing this piece. Like he's got a 3.2 steal rate this year.
Yeah.
Like he had like a guard steal rate as a center, like and like such a good finisher, man. I came away being like, I had him in the second when we did boards last time. And like, I like Enfali Dante a lot. Give that a read. Portsmouth preview is going to be the week after this one. As such, I've started to kind of reach out and try to get some interviews lined up. If you were an agent or a player who's in Portsmouth, hit me up. Malachi Lyons from Bradley, who was Missouri Valley Defensive Player of the Year, interviewed him. That's going to come out Tuesday. Podcast feed for that. Really cool to hear his story, kind of growing up in the Netherlands and then coming over here and just being one of the best defenders in college hoops and now off to Portsmouth. So super happy for him. So definitely check that out. Make sure you subscribe to us everywhere. Podcast feeds, Spotify, Apple, wherever you're listening.
NoSinsNBA.com,
YouTube. Follow Steven on Twitter at Steven G Hoops. Follow me at Bound Boards. Follow No Ceilings at No Ceilings NBA. Until next time, we'll see you guys later. Peace.
Much love, y'all.